Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasa Sagonige, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho.
Hello?
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. And we are live with Mike Bastine, Mark the Badger, Borching, and our special guest, Adrian Esposito, whom without him, none of this would be happening tonight. Welcome, everybody. Say hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
Oh.
Hello.
Sounds like we got a clear connection tonight. And how you guys like that throbbing intro music? Oh, that's pretty good, huh?
I like it.
It is kind of cool, if I do say so myself. I put some thought into that. So, well, I'll tell you, tonight's got to be historic. You know, we've been talking about the White Roots of Peace Council now for 10 years. And, yeah, I must admit, I've been kind of faking it. But no more. Well, you know, Mad Bear, I say faking it, being facetious. You know, Mad Bear has appeared to a lot of people in dreams. So I knew I had his by your leave. But we've got somebody on tonight that was a personal friend of Mad Bear, was pretty close to him. We talked to some of the people that knew Mad Bear. But Mike's going to fill in a lot of blanks tonight. He's got some messages of his own. And so then we'll introduce Mike. We'll say hi to Adrian. Then we'll have Mark the Badger. Borchin, he's going to work up you guys' Mayan birthday readings so you know the best time to go out and do your next vision quest. So anyway, Mike, I didn't do my homework. What's how do you say greetings in your language?
Well, I didn't get caught up on the Algonquin side of me because all my influence, I grew up in Iroquois country.
Oh, that's what you were telling me. Okay, so we'll go so, with Iroquois.
So they say Sego. That's their greetings.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, Sego to you, OCO, and everybody out there. So, Adrian, say hi.
Hi. How are you?
Doing pretty good. And Mark, you can hear us, right?
Yeah, but I may have I may need to transfer to another line here.
Oh, that's fine. Whatever you need to do.
I posted the message to you. I guess you didn't see it.
Oh, you know what to do. Well, you know how to call in, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'll probably do that, drop off, and come back in because I need to re-up this line.
We'll talk with Mike for a few minutes before we do the reading. So Mike,
okay.
Fill the folks in. I try not to interrupt a lot, even though I do. Tell everybody how how we met through Adrian, and then let their spirit speak.
All right. Well, Adrian and I got our paths crossed about 3 years ago. I co-authored a book called Iroquois Supernatural.
Yeah.
And that came out at the around August of 2011. And since then, the doors have been opening like crazy. And Adrian and his mom pursued making contact. They're in the next big city over. They're in Rochester, New York, and I'm just outside of Buffalo. And we started having conversation about the book, and then things led into other areas, which I have a daughter with Down syndrome, which is another area of which it ties right into the higher teachings. But Mad Bear was, he was a key part of my life when I was about 22 or 23. I had just come out of that late teenage, early 20s, just not having much direction in life other than partying 24/7. And I started getting this question that would pop up internally. It would say, is this all there is to life? And it made me look at what I was doing and how it just didn't resonate. It just was not how life seemingly should be lived. So I got involved with a church, and my dad wasn't real happy with the church I was with, so he introduced me to the book Rolling Thunder, in which Mad Bear was a good part of the book is dealing with Mad Bear. So when I read the book and found out that he was basically about an hour drive away, I started making visitations and started hearing things that were incredibly interesting, and yet you can't learn about it in books or in school.
No.
And I was wondering why this information was not being shared openly. I mean, it was in that Rolling Thunder publication, but there's so much more than what goes on even in that book. So as I started to, and my dad actually introduced me to Mad Bear because he thought he was getting me out of this church that he didn't care for, and he did a good job. He got me out of the church, but then he wasn't real happy with me pursuing the level of involvement with Mad Bear because it was the traditional teachings which my dad was not a part of.
Uh-huh.
And I had no exposure to it, so it was all new territory, which it was new, and yet at the same time it was like very familiar. It was something that
uh-huh.
resonated. So through that acquaintance, then I started to realize that Mad Bear was this great influence. And a lot of people ask, they go, was he your teacher? And I said, you know what? I said, basically I was Mad Bear's poop boy. I said I would
right,
do the dishes and split the wood and bring the wood in and take care of the chores and tasks around the house. But that's the best way to learn because you see it's not directed or scripted or scheduled in a manner that says, okay, sit down, everybody. We're gonna have some great teachings here.
Yeah.
So as you have life unfold around you, you start seeing how the application of the culture, how it applies to the life. You see that there are real elements that this life has to offer, and yet we don't seem to be getting an opportunity to see those connections. And that's what was so intriguing, is that Mad Bear would just demonstrate and model these elements, and a lot of times you would really be taken by some event and think, wow, this was really something. And then over time, it was almost, you would say, yeah. And people would say, did you see that? And you'd go, yeah, that happens all the time. And you'd start to see that by behaving in a certain manner, by living a certain way, style, a lifestyle, by actually living it, you're inviting these elements to come in closer.
Yep.
And then it unfolds before you. And then you may not even make the connections. Like, I'm going back still 30-some years, and I'm going, wow, that's what was going on there. But when I first experienced it, I had no clue, no idea that the depth and the magnitude that what these things were going to have significance in this life and how it would play a role.
So,
in the
so
times
like,
that we're in today.
It's like Thunderheart, you know, when our FBI hero is sitting out in that junk car and he's overwatching Ted Thin Elk's house, and he sees the old man come out, you know, with a bucket of water, and he fills it up, and he picks it up and walks 10 feet. He's grunting and groaning. And, by the way, somebody's got a real lot of, let's see, a lot of, hang on a second. A lot of noise on the microphone. Hang on. Trying to figure out who. Okay. Hey, Mike. I guess Mark, are you on a speaker?
Huh?
Let's see. Mike, are you on speakerphone?
No, I'm not on a speakerphone.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Whoever's at 716 area code, there's a lot of bad. It seems to be gone now. There was something. Anyway. So. He goes down to help the old man carry the water, you know, and the old man hands him something to eat, you know, and he takes a bite and he's gonna throw it away, and the old man says, no, put it down on the paper plate, knowing that the guy was gonna be making an offering, you know, and once he put that food down on the plate, the old man knew he had him right where he wanted him, but the guy didn't know. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so these are the types of things that as you go through it at that present time, you're interested, you're intrigued, you're watching as much as you can watch, you're trying to connect dots at the time. I mean, at that particular time, I had little or no reference points in which to use to say, this is what is going on and this is what I should be paying attention to. So you take in as much as you possibly can.
Yep.
And then decades later, things will resurface. And as they resurface, you start to make these connections and you go, oh man, now I know what that whole experience was about. And it might be just one event or a ceremony that you were invited into, not knowing what the real consequences or what the real teachings that may have been connected to that. So, you know, in fact, one of the greatest teachings, I think, is that when I was going through high school, there was a history teacher, which was just, he was the worst history teacher on the planet. But, fortunately, because of him, it wasn't the subject matter, or it was the subject matter. It wasn't him that became the focal point, and it was ancient world history. And I really paid attention. I liked that material. For some reason, I still can't explain why. But as I started to see this, and it didn't make sense at the time, Mad Bear would ask, he asked this question. He said, how did Indians get their name? And most people respond by what they learned in the history books, and they'll say, well, Columbus was headed looking for a shortcut to India to do trade. So everybody buys that. And then as you tell Mad Bear those things, he says, explain this to me. He said, in 1492, He says there was no country on planet Earth called India. So how could he have been going to India? As soon as he said that, I said, you're right. I said, it was called Hindustan. And he said, how do you know? And I said, well, that year I had the worst history teacher on the planet. And I said, the first week of school, I said, I knew the material. We did a quiz. I corrected the quiz in front of me. I knew I aced the material, the questions. And I started watching a soccer game outside. And the teacher asked me, he says, Mike, what's the answer to the next question? I go, I'm not sure which number was it. And he says, you weren't paying attention. I said, no. And as I tried to explain that I knew all the material, he had a pointer, and he would whack my hand every time I tried to explain or give my reasoning. And that's why then I just internalized, and I said, you know what, screw you, mister. I'm going to ace this course, not because you're a good teacher. It's because I like the material. And that's what I counted to when Mad Bear asked that question, that there was no country on planet Earth called India. And I said, yeah, it was Hindustan. So then people would, Mad Bear ask again, he said, then how did we get our name Indians? And I said, I don't know. That wasn't in the history book. So he took two translators and he went over to Spain. And he asked them to look for a reference in Columbus's log. He asked permission, and they granted permission for him to look in there. And in the Spanish section, he said the one phrase in there, he said the word Dios is God in Spanish. And he said the context in which this phrase was in there, he says it was the word Indios. And he said the translation in its context was that these people were in with God. And he said, isn't that kind of amazing that the history books don't depict the native people as being in with God? And I said, yeah. So then he asked the Italian translator to do the same thing, and he found another similar reference. And he said, in that context, it said that the people were God-like. It was a word similar to, like, Indios. And Mad Bear didn't speak Italian, and I don't. So he did his best rendition of that. And now we have two references that are indicating that here's people who Columbus has met. One reference is that they're godlike, and the other reference is that they're in with God. Now, just for someone to first meet a group of people and document that in their log, it's pretty impressive to me. That says, obviously, the behavior and the atmosphere of the community and what Columbus was exposed to impressed him to that point to make those references. So when we start hearing references in the modern history to savages, pagan, things that typically you would say these are not images that conjure up nice people. And then as you start to go through, you find out that the native peoples around the planet are still intact. As much as disruption has gone on throughout the centuries, they maintain. And Mad Bear's approach or his take on that was he would, when he would go to Washington, D.C. and speak to Congress or the Senate, he would tell them, he says, maybe your agenda is to make us go away and be non-existent. But he said there's a higher authority than yours. He says the Creator still wants us here. And the Creator wants us here for a reason, for a purpose. And that's when it started to really make this impression that I not only needed to be interested, I needed to make a commitment. I needed to take a position in life that said, not only will I walk this path, but I'm going to live that path. I'm going to take it in every part of life. And that life now has to be connected to a creator, a creation, all of the beings and all of the elements that have been provided here for us and by us to learn from and teach others about that. Share these insights that will help people understand this life doesn't have to be that confusing. It doesn't have to be this difficult. And yet we see how distracted people are these days. It's even worse than it was when I was growing up. And now I see that we're pretty much coming to a point in time that had been discussed or talked about with Mad Bear, where he said that there would be a time when people would feel so lost or so hopeless or so helpless that we would need to find these roots. We would trace these things back to a place and a time that it would open our eyes, and not just our eyes, it would open our hearts. And when it opens the heart, that's when we start to really share. That's when we take these things that have been gifted to this life through this structure of this creation that says, in order for you to understand what your real purpose in this life is, you have to start to look at the insights that the model represents. So the creation and all of the beings that are in that creation are supposed to be the things that we observe. And through observation, those are the insights that will take us to the places where most people don't have a clue. They've never ventured beyond certain elements, and they think that you learn how to be a good human being out of a book, or you learn how to understand life out of a book. And when you find out that in order to make the connections, we have to go back out into the bush. We have to go back out into the creation and submit ourselves to it to say, I didn't know. And I didn't know because the system that I came through didn't provide this opportunity. But now that it's here and I've gone through that time, that experience that says you're getting closer. You're getting closer to that element or elements that you can say, here's where the keys really lie. Here's where the things that have the value of this life, that represent what we're supposed to have. In fact, they would ask Mad Bear. They go, geez, they would hear him speak, and they would say, Mad Bear, what do they call your religion? And he says, we don't have one. He says the best that he could come up with, he said, we refer to it as a way of life. He said, it's not just a belief. He said, we live it. And he said, if we don't live it, we don't share in the empowerment. We don't share in that element that says, ah, you understand because you're living that life. You understand because you know that this is where the keys, this is where the teachings that have been handed down, really, they're still there. They're not lost. So when people would say, oh, you know, the poor Native people, they've lost so much. I think some has been lost, but the most important parts of the basis of how we understand and live this life, how we apply these things, they're still there. And when you find people like Mad Bear, they help you make those connections. They don't do it for you, but they lead you to a place where you finally say, hey, this isn't so bad after all. It's actually working. And you see that there's interference constantly, but you just go beyond it. You just keep going forward. And by taking these things in that stride, they fit so well into the harmonious, into accepting the things that are disruptive and saying, we don't need that energy. We don't need that element. We can go beyond that. So those are some of those elements that allow us to continue and share those teachings.
Oh. Wow. Well, yeah, that's really something. Yeah, Mad Bear, he was something else. And I never met him, but, you know, my second wife passed away in the end of 2007. But before we moved to Colorado in early 2006, she was, I could tell she had just woken up because she made a sound like, and I said, okay, tell me about your dream. She says, I just saw Ghost Wolf. Now, Ghost Wolf had passed away like right around Christmas of 2005. And she said, and she's rolling under there too. I said, really? And she said, yeah. And she says, and you know that guy, that chief who was frozen in the snow? I said, you talking about Bigfoot? Yeah. And she said, yeah, they were all together. There was a whole bunch of other ones, and they were all planning something. And I said, well, I said, you just, by name, mentioned three ghost dance chiefs. A lot of people don't know that Robert Ghost Wolf, the Hopi elders called him chief because he ran that ghost dance up in Montana in 98. RT and Bigfoot, ghost dance chiefs. And so they are planning something. And Mad Bear's in, right there in there with them.
And this is another part, another aspect of how we stay connected to the ancestors. That's the reference to saying all my relations. And then it expands beyond the human, and we start to see that all my relations are really every element that resides within this creation was put here for us to learn from and use as this guide, in a sense, that says, if you follow this, you will never go wrong. It will never mislead you. It will always give you those insights.
Oh, we just heard from Thunder People.
Yeah.
Did you hear that? When you said, if you follow us, you'll never go wrong? Yeah. Well, speaking of, yeah, well, go ahead, Mike. But when you get done, there's something that everybody has got inside of them, but they're just now finding out about it, and that's what Mark wants to tell you about. But go ahead.
Yeah, so these are the components that if we're too early on in our journey, and that's where I was very early on, I was very impressed by Rolling Thunder and David Benyangi, Philip Deer, Philip Cassador. I mean, there was so many of these great elders that were still around. And at my youth, I guess because of the way that we're educated and the way that we're allowed to go through this, we try to imitate, or we try to become those that we hold in a high esteem. And that's really incorrect, that we don't know it at the time, but that's what we think. We think, oh, I'd like to be like Mad Bear, or I'd like to be like Rolling Thunder. And as you start to get through that first impression, when we are taken in by all of that, and it's so impressive to us, it starts to sink in to say, I'll never be Rolling Thunder, and I'll never be Mad Bear, and I'll never be Philip Deer or any of the other elders. I'm me. But I can follow their lead. I can watch and observe to see how they handled these great gifts that they had, and yet they didn't go out and look for attention. They didn't try to make an impression on people. You saw that it was not only the behavior, but the sacred words that would come out of them, and you'd go, where does it come from? where does this wisdom reside? Because it is still here, and we haven't lost it. And in order for us to keep it alive, we have to keep sharing amongst ourselves and handing it over to as many people as we can find that have the like mind and the like heart. And when we find these people, those are the ones that we need to spend more time with, because they're the ones that will enhance or allow us to find and go beyond what was at least initially handed down to say, here's our culture, here's our guidelines, here's our ceremonies, here's what we do at certain times of the year. And I don't know if they've ever taken it a little further and said, go beyond that. Don't just take what I'm giving you. Take that and then go beyond. Do more with it than I did. And that's when we start to see it's our own personal take. Even though we had that impression from these other people, that we can take it further. We ask for the assistance and the guidance of those who have gone on before us, but we just say, I'm just going to be myself. I'm just going to let it happen. I don't have to make it happen. I just have to interact with these elements and see how they set with it. And then you move beyond and say, how far can we take it? How far can we go with it? And you see that there's really no end. It's just continuous. But the more we share, then we bring more into the circles and we say, take it as far as you want. Or just be happy where you're at. There's no requirement. There's nothing that says, here's what you have to achieve in that lifetime. Just take it to wherever you need to take it. And the nice thing is, when we seem to think that we're satisfied, then there's more. And as we think that we get satisfied again, there's more. So those are the greatest elements that I've experienced, which is, I'm not ever going to leave this path, and I'm not ever going to turn away from it, because it just provides so much. And the more it provides, then you say, wow, what else is there? I know there's more. So I'm just going to keep working at it. So what's Badger have to say to us?
Well, what do you think, Mark? Let's see. I guess first thing we would need from you, Mike, is your full birth date. And if you know whether you're born before or after sunset.
Okay. I can tell you it's 9/9/53.
Okay.
And I'm going to just ask my mom what time of day I was born. I think it was evening. What time was I born? What time was I born? What time was I born?
You were born at 20 minutes to 11 at night.
20 minutes to 11 at night.
9/9/53, okay. And that gives something to work with. Let's see.
Okay. Well, I got it. So, September 9th, 1953, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the first part of the reading is going to be what would come up in the traditional Mayan Zolk'in for your birth for that day. And that comes up as a, it's called the day called Ten Lamot. And the Ten has a lot to do with creativity and flowing of things. And also, double the five energy, which comes up with Quetzalcoatl a lot. And the Lama is literally a star glyph. It has a pattern usually that looks similar to like the Hopi shield. It's kind of like if you took the Hopi shield and had the four dots and turned the cross into a like a little four-pointed star, it would look like that. And that is telling us, has to do with things like planting things, growing things with abundance and artistic things, creativity. And it's also typically associated with the planet Venus. So, and this is in the this day is in a 13-day cycle of Kuok, and that connects back to what Blue Otter was saying when you had the thunder and the thunder beings, because that's Kuok is the thunderstorm energy and the thunder beings and the Wiccan of Buddha and all that. So that tends to also connect into the ancestors. The thunder beings and stuff are in the direction of the west and on the medicine wheel. So it places the connection with the ancestors there. So it kind of tends to say a lot about what you were already talking about in terms of making those connections with ancestors and the dream thing that Blue Otter talked about with his wife and having the ancestors help with creativity and planting things and growing things of knowledge, wisdom, or anything. And so that pretty much, that makes a lot of sense with all the things you've been saying already.
Wow.
The only thing I would add, huh?
Thank you for that. That's kind of, it does just fit into primarily how I go through a daily routine, how it stays connected. I don't think a day has gone by that I haven't mentioned or at least thought of the elders or these people who had provided so much opportunity. And that's the thing. They don't force it. They just, it's there around you, and they just give you that chance to take it and say, go ahead. See what you can do with it. This is what I did with it. You saw what I did. See what you can do. And
well, let
really
me give
is.
You another part here.
All right.
Okay.
So that was what, if you look up in the traditional Mayan count, that's kind of what it says about. But I did a second reading, and this one is with a Mayan Zolk'in calendar that is expanded that I was given. And it actually has three components to it. It has a forward flow of time, a backward flow of time, and where these two time flows come together in the unity of a time flow. So I'm going to go, and the forward flow of time is the way we normally look at time, you know, moving forward. A backward flow of time, you know, quantum science is starting to prove that exists. Not only that it exists, but that you can actually change things. In other words, you can do a prayer that actually affects the past, and there have been quantum physics experiments that have basically proved that. So we'll take your birth on the forward flow of time.
Oh, by the way, the ancient Hebrews would agree with you on that.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's good
to know. All the way up to and including correcting bad paths that your ancestors were.
Uh-huh, yeah. So that's part of the healing. So, and that's it makes sense because, that's where ancestors come into the picture, too. So on the forward flow, we have for you a Malat glyph that is a red energy glyph, and it has to do with purification, expanding things, purification of things that have to do with water, especially when water is used to connect things together. When I say together, I mean at all levels, all the way up to the universe and creation level. But it also has an aspect here of light, and it's not just any type of light. It's a radial spiraling type of light that the Russian quantum guys call torsion energy. And those two come in together and will form our reality. And they have some partnering energy here of being aware of things, prophetic things, things that bring a heaven-like atmosphere into being. And so it's kind of a purification process, an understanding of things with water and light, and and prophecy and also how to change things to make it better. And it's in a cycle that is has to do with sacrifice and reflecting on things, mirroring energy and things like that in action. So what's coming to me on this is it would be useful for you to connect in with the Hopi part, especially where they talk about the purification. And also the things they talk about where they talk about the twins at the North and South Pole.
He'll be doing that.
Huh?
He'll be going into that.
So those are some. Now on the backward flow, so this is moving from the next world age back into our cycle. And this is things that you may have been seeing in your life starting to get stronger and more powerful, especially somewhere around 1997, 98, or maybe even before that, or maybe a little bit after that. This actually is going to connect you to Blue Otter because it's a eek glyph. His is a 9-eek. Yours turns out to be a 7-eek. And it's a T-cross symbol. You can see it in a lot of Mayan places. You can also see it at the Great Kiva at Chaco Canyon. At the entrance there, it's a large T. You can see it in a lot of the Pueblos. Sometimes it's a very shallow T on the top, but it's a T symbol. And it has to do with energy of wind and spirit and breath. And it's also a symbol of Quetzalcoatl because his was a 9-eek. And so you have a connection into that type of energy and the spirit energy here. And spirit and communication. So that's getting back again to the idea of ancestors. But it's also bringing in Quetzalcoatl or the Lord of the Wind and the Water, because this particular glyph is the wind glyph. So it's the wind part, which would relate to the Quetzal part of Quetzalcoatl. It's a white color glyph. And it has things that you've been maybe have been working on, or things that you may have been seeing as important aspects of your life, or the song path that you're on right now, has to do with sharing of things, inspiring spiritual communications and things in other people, and prayer and tuning into things, reflecting on things a lot in that sharing and inspiration. And it's coming up again with the Tecmatl or Etznab energy, which is the mirror energy, and ordering things in eternity, making some sacrifices here. I don't mean, you know, like blood sacrifices and stuff like that necessarily, but personal things where you're willing to give up things and to get further down the path on these. And it's in a cycle that's the Olin or Kaban energy, which has to do with thought and movement and flowing of things and consciousness, synchronization of things. So synchronizing consciousness, thought, and that gets back to your thing about sharing in spirit. And this is, I think, part of what you've been learning about is how things are connected. This is another way of saying the In Lakesh or Amitakyasana or the web of life or something like that, or just the creation and creator. It's another way of saying. So this is indicating probably a strong desire to take those aspects of how creation works and moves and flows and synchronizes and heartbeats together, and inspiring other people to learn about that in a spiritual sense to help them on their spiritual path. I would say that's probably become a pretty big, strong aspect of your life. And it also has a component here of truth and harmony, harmonizing truth. That's probably been becoming a big, important thing, or stronger as the years have gone on for you, too. So where these two come together, the Eek and the Moloch glyph, where they come together, they create the unity of the two time flows. So this is kind of like a bridge or a doorway or something that you move along and move from one place to the other, from one world to the next. And for you, it's a 5-Ok. And Ok is the dog glyph. It's the Xoatl of the underworld, Quetzalcoatl's partner. They had a dog, kind of like the Egyptian Anubis, That would help the person that had died to travel through the underworld. So it's kind of like, you know, Quetzalcoatl loans you his dog to help you make it through to the other side. So you got some energy here that connects to that. And it's about power of love, flowing, of loyalty, strong heart and strong, good, powerful virtues and beliefs, action, a lot of things about action and radiating action, you know, getting action to grow and radiate and have a lot of powerful energy. And then also, along with the dog energy here, you also have some jaguar energy, too. It brings in the ability to move outside of time, move through the underworld into the next world cycle, mystical things, you know. That energy is also probably going to be showing up with your communications with ancestors, probably, especially if you do vision quest on your Mayan birthday in the traditional calendar. And it's in a cycle that has to do with healing. So it's the manic hand glyph and the skillful hand or the hand kabul that was down there in Guatemala and all through Mexico and all that. And so I'd say, you know, the aspect of healing is coming up here too. So you're probably going to use these ideas of heart and good virtue and action and things, doing things and making those connections to ancestors and helping others to heal themselves. And it's probably going to be a little bit more on the spiritual side of the fence of the healing form that then is going to bleed back through and affect their physical body, which I think that fits in with a lot of Native thinking about how the shamans and medicine men work. And it has an aspect here, too, of the polarization, the thing like with the Hopi twins at the two poles, and or the eagle and the condor. It has an aspect of that in here as well. So, and it's also a white energy glyph. So,
does
that make
sense?
That's
incredible. That is, it all makes sense. Actually, about 10 years ago, we had a gathering down in North Carolina, and they had brought up six elders from Machu Picchu, and there were six of us from North America, and they actually called it the reuniting of the eagle and the condor. And we went through an ayahuasca ceremony with the Peruvians, and when we were done, then we had taken them through a lodge, the way they conduct the lodges in North America. They said it was way too hot. They didn't like it. But it was okay. It was okay. We exchanged those things. And Ted Williams, Tuscarora man, he was a part of that. And he had a rendition of the Thanksgiving address that when you heard him give this rendition, and he would softly play a drum along with it, I'll tell you, the tears just roll right down your face. It was so powerful. And I asked him numerous times if he would allow me to tape that, and he always said no. And I never asked him why. I just accepted that fact. But this particular time, I asked a friend to take me into town, and I picked up a micro cassette. And I recorded it. I knew he was going to do it, so I recorded him giving that Thanksgiving address. And when it was done, one of the Peruvian people asked, they said, could we get a copy of that? Would you make a copy? And Ted said, no. He goes, I don't allow it to be recorded. So I had to step up, and I said, Ted, I was naughty. I said, I went to town, and I got a recorder, and I taped it. Well, everybody knows in the traditional ways, if someone of a true heart and of a brethren type of thing, they like something so much and they ask for it, we have to give it to them. So I gifted order with that copy of the Thanksgiving address in it, and Ted was not upset by that. And in return, that man gave me a crystal, and I said, wow, you know, thank you. And I said, so, as I went through my travels, a lady, I showed this one woman, she's a crystal lady out in Arizona. She took a look at it, and she says, "Where did you get that crystal?" I said, "It was gifted to me from a Peruvian man from Machu Picchu." She said, "Do you know what that is?" I said, "Yeah, it's a crystal." And she says, "No, that's not just a crystal." She held it up in the sunlight, and she said, "You see on this one face, there's a perfect triangle raised up on the one face." I said, "Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat." And she says, "That's not just neat." She says, "This is what they call a recorder." And I go, "I don't know what that is." And she says, "It holds all of the history." And she held it up to the sun again, and you could see the outline of Machu Picchu inside the crystal in the fractures. And then as she turned it, she said, "Do you see all these hundreds of pyramids inside that are glistening? They're lighting right up in the sunlight." And I said, "Wow, I never saw that before." And as that time went by, it made sense to me because I gifted that man a recorder. And he, in turn, gifted me a recorder.
Wow.
And I just said, you couldn't sit down and script this stuff. You couldn't say, here's what's going to happen in this journey. And yet, I just got that crystal back. It just came to me last weekend. And it was out on loan for a couple of years, and actually longer than I thought it would be. And I was kind of worried that it might not come back, but it came back.
And put the crystal under, put the crystal like under your pillow or something and go to sleep. And when you're, sometimes when people are asleep, they're kind of receptive to things, and you know, maybe you can like sort of read or learn some things from it while you're sleeping.
Wow. Yeah, osmosis.
Yeah. Well, our brains kind of slide in another gear, so sometimes it's easier for us to connect into that stuff when we're sleep in a sleep state.
Wow.
I'm going to try that tonight. Let me share something with you that isn't written down anywhere. There was a female chief. Her title was Spotted Snake. That's not her name, but she was a spotted snake. And Dr. Rogers told me exactly where it came from, and I can't remember what he told me, but I think it's more related to Aztec. But anyway, she said that the Cherokee used to have a ceremony once a year where they would build a house, or they would seal a house. They'd have quite a bit of seating in there. The idea was to totally exclude all the lights and to make a small hole inside of the building with a little chute where they could slide a large crystal in. Now, Deani Oahu may know more about this than – I've never spoken with her, but she keeps a crystal ark. But anyway, people would assemble there certain times, certain day of the year, and probably one of the solstices or who knows. But once the light hit that crystal, the display inside the building was probably something akin to what the world knows today as a hologram. But that's as far as she went. But now I know that there's of another Cherokee crystal woman. See, Cherokees, most Indians are scared of crystals, and Cherokees have used them, you know, for thousands of years. We used them for scrying, trying to figure out where the game is going to be. And I found out from military intelligence officer that during Vietnam they had 80% success rate with figuring out where Eddie was going to be, but they had learned a crystal map dowsing from old Cherokee veterans, and they've been using it in military intelligence since the 1890s. And who knew?
Wow. Well,
one more thing that isn't in writing that I got from a traditional Hebrew rabbi. He told me that when Moses built the ark, it was completely sealed off,
but that there was a hole engineered at the top center of the ark, and Moses slid in a huge crystal to provide lighting by reflection from sunlight from the inside of the ark.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
You know, let's see if we can hear something from Adrian, and I'll tell you a little bit how Adrian fits into this this conversation or what we are going through and how it fits in, how he fits in here. We crossed paths about 3 years ago. Adrian has Asperger's syndrome. It's part of the autism spectrum. And these people are incredibly special people. And they have...
Like Einstein?
Yeah. Well, and it depends on which area of gift that they exercise it in. His is in making videos and documentaries, and he's a whiz at editing and putting the sequences together to make such a clear story and statement. And what is key about what his condition is, he was interested when he found out that I have a daughter with Down syndrome. And I said, these are some of the most incredible human beings that I have ever met. And the reason I say that is they don't get so distracted by the typical stuff that most average people on the street these days get entangled in, and they get distracted by. They stay so focused. Their brain function is so incredible. Now, that's autism. And as you get into the Down syndrome, you move the element or the gift into the heart component. And these are the purest, the most unconditional loving humans that you will ever meet. In fact, my daughter, she's 15. She's just she's the best human being I've ever met. And I tell her that routinely, and as soon as she hears those words, she just beams. She just lights right up. And I just let her know, I said, we're so lucky to have a human being that lives with us like you. I said, because you every day have that love of the Creator right in them, and that they never, she's one of the easiest kids that I've ever had to grow. I have two other kids from a previous marriage and they're great kids. Believe me, they're really great kids. They never had any problems with them. But there's something so incredible different about Bailey. And that's what I want to tie into with Adrian, is that we don't always recognize these gifts, and yet the elders, they do. They see the gift. And they know that that's what our part of our responsibility is to give them the opportunity to join in with us, to celebrate this life and include them and make them feel included, not just because a law says, oh, you gotta include them with your group. No, we include them because they have a gift that they're bringing to this life that they want to share. And that's how I wanted to tie that in, and let's see if Adrian can give us a little bit of, from his perspective, things that he's been observing. Yeah,
before we do that, I just want to point out a couple of very famous Cherokee Indians named Roy Rogers and Dale Evans started a foundation a long time ago, and it was more Dale's bailiwick, but he called it Angels Unawares.
Yep. You know, there's a disabilities museum up in the Buffalo area. Adrian went with us to visit there.
Yeah, I just went there today, too. He dropped off some Bury My Heart with Tonawanda DVDs there, too.
Nice. And in the one picture with the Holy Family, when you see renditions that artists would paint back in the back 1400s and before, in that depiction with the Holy Family, I've never noticed it before, but the curator pointed it out, and he said, look at this person here in the Holy Family. It was a person with Down syndrome. And it's because it's visible, it's a, because the characteristics would show that, then you start to say, of course, why wouldn't they have someone like this that holds the love of the Creator every day? They wake up, every day is like Christmas to them. They wake up with a smile and they're pleasant to be around. And you just go, how do they do this? How do you maintain this inner happiness to a level where it just shows? And this is what we're working with the people who they refer to as disabilities. And you're right, those, all these people, and we need to help the others awaken and recognize that we need these people because they hold the element that is the love that the Creator imparts to every human, but they seem to be able to display it without making any effort. It's just a part of who and what they are. So let's see what Adrian has for us.
Yeah, I write on, Mike. I agree with everything that's been going on the show today and everything that's happened so far with me and you in this whole experience. And I just wanted to get into how I met Mike. I met him actually through my mom. When she had found out about Mike's book, Iroquois Supernatural, and she contacted him, and one day when she came home from the hospital because she had surgery, Mike called and had this very beautiful, loving conversation with her, and we asked if he could be in this, Mike could be in this film, Bury My Heart with Tonawanda, because what happened was I had asked Gary if I could, Gary actually told me, Gary Sundown, who's Tonawanda Seneca, if he told me that that the scene I had written in the script for Bury My Heart with Tonawanda was not, we couldn't use because it was a round dance at nighttime at a campfire, and he said that the Tonawanda Seneca Nation wouldn't want that to be filmed because of how Hollywood has very much exploited Native people on the screen, on the Hollywood screens. So I had to think of something fast, and I had known about Mike Bastine through my mom and conversations with him, and so I asked Mike if he could be in this film that we were trying to make that was still in production. This one scene that wasn't scripted, where he would talk about how people with disabilities, as I say, are gifted and are here to teach us lessons. And when we started filming it, when the director yelled action and we started filming it, the magic came to life. You know, just like magic, everything that the film represented and was about came to life in what Mike said. And recently, I just finished this documentary called Inner Healing. It took me 4 years to finish, and that's about me meeting with different Native healers to try to help me cope with my autism and to really find an answer with a lot of problems I've been having at home with anger. And it's not released yet. I've just finished it with the music and everything. But when people watch the documentary, they will see that at the end of the film that I've had the answer all the time, and it's not going to happen through some miraculous, you know, ceremony or something like that. You have to learn, you know, to deal with this through the gifts that are given and also through the advice from the different healers. And Mike Bastine is in the film, too. I don't know if I mentioned that in the documentary. And he talked about how, you know, gave me his advice and about Bailey, his daughter with Down syndrome, and if you watch the, when people will see the documentary, that all the native healers who are in that film who have no contact with each other basically say the same thing, which is pretty interesting, and it was interesting for me at the time and when I was editing the film together, but it's been quite an interesting journey, a wonderful, beautiful journey, and I hope things for me and Mike will take off.
Well, they already have, Adrian. And
yeah.
You keep doing the good work, and we'll keep supporting it. And that's what it's about. It's a matter of bringing together the diversity and showing how common that we all have the same element within us. And as Adrian has stated, that we don't need to go through a regimented program in order to understand that all that we know and all that we share is its parallels, no matter if it's Cherokee, if it's Algonquin, if it's Iroquois, they all follow this element that says you've been given an opportunity to live in a creation that has such diversity in life forms, whether it's the water life, the plant life, or any of the other components. We start to see that the Creator really loves diversity. And if you don't believe that, just look at all the different kinds of fish, the different kinds of grass, the different kinds of trees. And then you start to see that even though we share this diverse world, it's harmonious. And it is not as what some people perceived what Darwin was saying as survival of the fittest. It's survival of the harmonious. So those that join in and want to be a part of how we interact on the harmonious, that's where we find that interconnectedness, and that's where we see that the higher element of function of life, it's shared amongst us. If we exclude any part of it, we're being diminished. We're the ones that are losing out. And that's why the inclusion, we don't have to agree with it, we don't have to like it, but we have to bring it in and accept it as a part of what this life has to offer.
Oh. I agree 100% with what you just said, Mike, and I also feel that the film that you were in, Bury My Heart with Tonawanda, is really, I didn't make it just for money or for fame or glory. I made it to help people, and in case anybody who's listening to our conversation doesn't know what Bury My Heart with Tonawanda about, Bury My Heart with Tonawanda is a movie set in the late 1800s and here in upstate New York where I live, and it's about a boy born with Down syndrome who gets adopted by the Tonawanda Seneca Nation. And the reason I made the film was to help both people who are Native American and in the disability community get a message of it, that basically we're all gifted, and that basically people should, both Native and non-Native, should look at the no-face doll. I don't know, Will, if you know what the no-face doll is and the story behind that, but just that we should learn to look at things from the way the Haudenosaunee and Seneca look at the way with the no-face doll story, is that we shouldn't put a face on it and say this is how this person should specifically look as, and that, you know, that way, and to show that we're all gifted and we're all equal. And I feel that, and I hope that Bury My Heart with Tonawanda will touch many people, and Mike's message will get out there and reach as many people as possible in both communities.
Yeah, the no-face doll is the representation of, we have typically seemed to be impressed with the influence that the physical beauty is what we're really attracted to, and that we pay more attention to it. So in their legend, in one of their stories, they have this, it's just a story about one of the beautiful beings, and she kept looking at herself in the reflection of the water, and she kind of got the creator a little bit upset because she was so vain and just looking at her own physical beauty. And so as a result, the one time she went to look in the reflection and she had no face. And it's because we do put too much emphasis on the physical beauty. We don't look beyond at the human and say, what a beautiful human being that is. And that's part of the expression that most that I've heard from all of the elder people, all the elders that live in that life, they know that we have to look beyond that surface. We need to go to the inner part of the human and say, wow, you're really a great human being in there. And because other people haven't seen it, you hide it. You don't want to bring it out. And we want those people to know that it's other people who can help bring or share that, to bring those elements back to the surface, to say, look beyond just the eyes and the color of the hair and the physical condition that you're looking at, and look to see what is the content inside that. Because the potential, it was already there. It was given. But did they work with it? Did they make it, keep it alive and help it manifest and see the beauty from within? And this is where we get now, what keeps popping in is when I make references to that is animals speaks, or animals that talk. And when we say animals talk, we don't literally mean that. But what we're saying is that the animal is speaking to us because they want to communicate with the human. They want to ask the human, why are you destroying your planet? Why are you treating this creation like a commodity? Why are you not having any sensitivity or feelings to say, you know, this is our home too? And when I start to look at how humans communicate, and they say, oh, this is the creative part. We like to use irony. We like to use metaphor. We like to use all of these other components in to make it the creative part of what we think is communication. And I go, I love how animals talk. I love their communication because they don't use irony or paradox or sarcasm or any of the things that humans, and it's okay, I think, for a while, but if we're going to truly communicate, if we're going to convey a message so clear, we have to communicate like the animals. We cannot use those so-called creative things that we say, well, that's kind of cute, but and it might be humorous at one point, but we need to learn also how to communicate. Why do you think they say heart to heart? And when we have a face to face, and a heart to heart, now we've really communicated. Now we've been able to convey these deepest elements of life to share, to say, do you see how the animals do it? And it works so well for them. There's no confusion. When a whale finds a pod of fish and they're saying, hey, the food's over here, they communicate that. Everybody comes and shows up because they're going, man, this is how we're supposed to help each other. We're supposed to do this communication and look out for one another. And again, it takes us back to that element that says it's survival of the harmonious. Survival of the fittest only works in such a small model, a small example in this life. And that's why we need to look at the bigger picture so we can start to share these innermost parts of what we hold and what we share internally and say, this is what I want to communicate. This is what I want to bring to light and say, how can we energize that? Well, there's a lot of ways. I mean, we wait for certain alignments in the sky. We wait for the solstices and the equinoxes, and we just go certain moon phase. And now we start saying, do you see how the teachings are still here? They've never gone away. Some of the people went away, and they didn't have a chance to impart that, but they're still rooting for us. They're in the cheering section. It's all my relations. It's saying, come on, you can do it. We know you can do it. And if we can get enough people just to hear that and start to work on it, we plant the seeds and we go, it'll grow. We know it'll grow.
Yeah.
But if you – go ahead, Adrian.
Oh, okay. I agree, and I believe that our friend Ojibwe, friend John Volpe, is trying to do that. He's trying to help Mother Earth and help these animals and be a good human being, but the powers that be are trying to stop him, and it's just very frustrating and upsetting. I didn't know if you wanted to get into that conversation about our friend John.
Well, I just had a meeting earlier today about starting a website on his behalf, and I would like to title it, it's probably already been taken, but I'd like to title it Sacred Waters, because that's where most of his work takes place, is maintaining the good quality, the pureness of water, and how it's so key to every life form. Everything on this planet needs water, and if we don't pay attention to how it's being decimated, how it's being abused, and people just don't honor that water and say, you know, you go a day or a couple without that, you're really going to start changing your tune. You're going to start saying, how can I save a little bit of this, and how can I treat it better? How can I make this life, and not just because we need it. It's for the other life, too. All of that life wants to partake in the water that's been provided. And the Creator didn't put it here with toxins in it and say, here, try to drink that. The Creator put all the waters here to say, here, some transfer these other elements and these other components, but they're used for other medicines. And the other stuff is the sweet waters and the things that we use that we drink and we take internally, and the other animals use prolifically. And we start to see that we're in dire straits with water, and people just, they just don't seem to get it. But this is why the whole concept of saying, is it really easy to do this? It is when you understand that it takes these little steps in the direction that says, here's what will please the Creator. If we keep that phrase in mind, or this phrase that would say, what can I do today that is in the highest good for all life? That's when we start to take a look at our own behavior and say, wow, I have a lot of things I need to work on. And if as long as I can keep focused on myself, maybe I can get into that place where I can put a smile on the Creator's face and say, we're doing your work. We know what we're supposed to do, and we're making our best efforts. And we know that the animals will appreciate it. And we know that the times we're in, it was foretold. It was handed down. It said they would abuse and take advantage of and neglect. And boy, if we aren't in the times of that right now and seeing how the response from weather and the fires and the things that are going on, and you're going, you know, I don't look at it as the end of times. I look at this as the transitional period that we're in that says in another few years it will be complete. And once it's complete, those who don't resonate with that frequency, this is where the readings start to come in, and the saying with the quantum mechanics and the quantum understanding, those elements will be left in the dimension that says, if that's what you prefer, then that's your world. That's where you will stay. Until you work through it, the others are going to move on into the more harmonious stage of life. And those are the ones that I say I think it is key that we hang on to and keep included in this life. Anybody who gets referred to as someone with a disability, I go, they have such a great insight to this life. We could only hope to understand how they see it. But we're trying. And we know that they hold that secret. They hold that element because that's the life that they were gifted. And that's what they're using it for. And most people won't see it because they go, well, what's his IQ? And I always respond to that and I say, you know what? Bring your IQ with you. We're going to go out and talk to the squirrels today. Bring your IQ. We're going to go over and have a conversation with these plants. We're going to see what the IQ can do with that. And they don't like it. They get upset. And I'm going, you shouldn't be upset. You should be using. And then when people would tell me, they go, oh, you know, so-and-so, man, is he smart. And I go, then why doesn't he use it? If he's that smart, why doesn't he use it? So those are some of the basics that come out of what the elders have been handing down to us, and they want us to just take it and say, share it. Don't hide it away. Don't keep it a secret. It's not a secret. We want you to share these things so that people see and understand that this life is just filled with intrigue and adventure, and the journey needs to keep taking us to a new place. And as we keep journeying and going to these new places, do we need to do it physically? I don't think so. Here's where we start to see that we can make dimensional journeys. We can move beyond just the physical. And I think the physical can actually become the restraint that we get caught into. And we need to just say, how can I move a little bit out of that physical? Close your eyes and go out into that natural world and go to the beach, go to the waters, go to the places where you see all the trees and the birds, and you start saying, wow, how could we ever even sit down and begin to try to write a description? I've asked a few people. I said, you know, you're brilliant engineers. I said, sit down and write, describe, draw something in description. Make me a new tree. And you can't use any references of one of the ones that are already out there. I want something new. They can't do it because it's so restrictive the way the education and the academia has interfered with our brain function. The technology even does it. So we need to keep them in their own places but get back to those ways. And when people would say, oh, do you remember this guy? Mad Bear, Rolling Thunder, you know, when he would come to town, it would start to thunder, and Mad Bear would come in, and people would say, did you see or hear those things? And you start to go, we all have it within us. There you go.
Hey, Mike?
Yeah?
What do you think about the domain sacredwaters.us?
I like
okay.
it.
Oh. Mike, the other thing is
we're gonna own it in 5 seconds. I'm pushing the button on it.
All right.
Okay,
did Adrian want a reading on his birth?
Yeah,
sure.
Let's hear.
Yeah,
Adrian.
Sure. Yeah, I just have to ask my mom what time of day I was born, but I was born the December 10th. 1988, and let me just ask her what time of day I was born, just like you asked Mike. What they want to know what time of day I was born. Was it day or nighttime? It was the evening.
Evening?
About 9 o'clock.
Oh, okay. All that. All right. So December 10th.
Oh, nice.
And that was 1988, right?
Yes.
Okay, so in the first part, in the traditional Mayan, when you were born on a day called 3 Con, and it's the three numbers has the thing about creativity, especially the right brain, abstract thinking type of creativity, you know, artistic creative energy in the right side of the brain. And then the conglyph gives you
Did he say before
energy.
Or after that?
His was after.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
The con thing is things, ability to kind of bring out things that are hidden, and especially things when it's growing things, like the things we talked with about planting seeds earlier. And this is sitting in a cycle of Eek, the Eek glyph, which connects you both to both of, you know, to Blue Water and Mike both, and it places that connection. So a lot on creativity, planting things, and uncovering things, having things come, you know, where you can see it, especially things, you know, spiritual type things. I'll look up in the other one and see what it says. oh wow, you've got several things that are connecting you to Mad Bear.
Oh,
this one's a direct hit. Let me pull up. I'm trying to remember something. Oh golly.
Hey, your dad was an Esposito, right?
Yes.
Do you know whether you have anybody named Garcia in his family line?
I'm not sure about Garcia. I have to ask my dad or my mom.
Ask him, because your Torah portion is coming up that you are connected with Judah on both your Torah portion and your half Torah, and I know the Garcias are descendants of King David. And
oh.
Ask him.
All right, I'll ask my mom real quick. Hey, Mom, is there a Garcia Esposito in my family?
No.
Oh, no, she just said no.
But there may be ancestors. You know, it may be 20 generations back, but somehow you're
right.
Connected. You're connected with the tribe of Judah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ask your mother, does your mother have any Hebrew blood?
No, she
knows of?
Her family is from Lithuania. My grandmother, who passed on last October, she was Lithuanian, my mom and my grandfather, but I don't know if we have any Hebrew blood in us dating back, you know, it might be generations back, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, Adrian, your birth on the 10th, December 10th, Mad Bear passed over on December 10th, 1985.
Wow.
Yeah, I just saw that on Wikipedia not that long ago.
And now what I'm going to do is, remember on the other reading I did, a forward, backward, medium, 0 point, balancing unity flow. So the first one, on the forward flow, you have a symbol that relates to balance and heart energy. And this particular day, it's called Six Balance, and it also, Mad Bear is connected to that particular one too. So it's not just the December 10th date, it's also showing up here. So it's telling me, what that seems to tell me is that you and Mad Bear, your work and his has an overlap, and it has to do with these particular things. Number one, balance. A balance and a completion. Correct actions. Equalizing things. Dynamic movement and equalization. And peace is a partner energy of the balance, and it brings aspect of hope, peace, childlikeness, and this is tying in a cycle that's Hunepku, or creator energy, and harmony. We've heard stuff about that harmonizing with Creator and stuff coming up in our in the interview so far. So this is really connecting, I think, that type of stuff between you and Mad Bear. I have a mic there, too, as well, and some, to some extent, Blue Otter. And now on the backward flow, we have a something that deals with light in mirrors that we heard in the earlier reading, and sacrifice and prayer and eek energy again, spirit energy, breath, prayer, with light, and reflecting on things, expanding the universal order, things blooming and reflecting with light. That is really paralleling with the earlier reading a lot. It's connecting there. So this is pretty blatantly clear about the relationship you two have with Mad Bear. And there's a this is also in that manic healing cycle, too, with the that we talked about earlier. So there's a lot of common energy here between you two. Now, where these two come together, the balance and the light and reflecting and the eek energy, it's a foramix, and it has to do with this is where the two time flows come together. This has to do with belonging, giving, birthing things as natural things, natural ways of things, dimensionality of form, bringing things into form and from one dimension to the other, working with that, but in a natural way, how those things naturally work, how Creator does it. And it has the thing here where the water energy is coming up, which came up with your friend earlier, too. And also in the ancestors. So there's a quite a bit of overlap between both of you, a lot. And it really, where it really strongly overlaps, and I put it all together, it's healing, light, energy, white and water, ancestors guiding that, and that giving birth to new ways of doing things. That seems to be a big part of what you're doing together. Your part of the reading is bringing a little bit difference there, where what you bring to the picture that's a little bit different is the balance, and balance and peace. And that is where that balance, especially the balance part, is where Mad Bear's coming in at.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I would suspect. I would suspect if you did some work and some, just ask, just to think and say, hey, Mad Bear, give me some help here, and you do that, and you can do it when you're like I said earlier, kind of like with the crystal, do it before you're going to sleep, or, because that way you might have a dream about it or something, or. But I would say look for things like that, because that's where I see you bringing that aspect of teachings and things of Mad Bear's, things that have to do with balance. Is pretty balance, and especially
yeah.
with Creator.
Yeah, my mom always tells me, with these films I'm making and a lot of other stuff that I'm a mess, that I'm trying to be like a new peace messenger or something like that, what you're saying, bring my mess, be like a new person that brings peace and, and balance to the world. That's similar to what my mom was saying.
That's right.
Yeah, you're looking at, it's kind of like the thing that's going to help you with it is Creator and your heart center and also the focusing on the desire for the oneness and community and all that stuff working harmoniously, which we've heard a lot about in this particular interview as well. So I think that this thing about the balance in Mad Bear is going to be something that helps both of you significantly achieve all the other things I've been doing and saying about you in the readings where you connect really close. and this thing about the balance is a little bit different for you, so it's a little bit stronger. So the way I look at it is that's kind of what you bring to the picture that's a little bit that needs to be brought in, and it's a little bit stronger, and it's a little bit more, not totally unique, but a little bit more special and stronger with you, and that's your connection with Madbear. So that's what you bring in, I think, is the way I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
So I would look for things like that.
Yeah, I've always had this feeling in the back of my neck or at nighttime that when I'm about to go to sleep that somehow, and, you know, that my grandmother on my dad's side, for some reason, I've had this feeling that she's half Cherokee or something like that. I don't know if that's showing up in any of your readings or...
It's shown up in a possibly in terms of the for both of you, you had things sitting in the same Manique cycle. And what's coming to me about it right now is that Manique is also, it's called the hand glyph, but it's also relates to a deer.
Uh-huh.
So what I would be looking for is things in Cherokee that relates to deer. And I know there's a specific story, and it's a story, Blue Otter knows this one, I'm pretty sure. It's a story that was in a book about the Lord of the Wind and the Water, and it was about the Cherokee. And in the story, the healer, the great prophet, great healer, is out in the forest, and he's got his 12 students, or apostles, disciples, you know, whatever you want to call them, and he's teaching. And they're out in the forest, and they come upon this little baby deer all by itself, no mother. And they said that the prophet or the Lord of Wind and Water had an ability to communicate with animals. And so he goes up to the little deer and, you know, in mental talk or whatever, says, you know, where's your mother at? So the little deer turns around and goes down the path and walks over here, and I don't know, maybe a quarter mile away or so. I'm not sure how far, but the mother's laying there dead. Probably
mm-hmm.
attacked, I don't know, like by a mountain lion or something, you know, with gashes on her side. And so the great healer kneels down beside her body, and he moves his hands across her body. And as his hands pass, the wounds heal, and the mother gets up and is alive.
Right.
And one of his students, or maybe a couple of them, asked him, says, well, you know, great healer, you know, why did you waste your power on an animal? And he turns and he looks at him, he says, there is no deed of charity or humanity or compassion that is so small in my father's eyes that it's not greater than all the gems and jewels or whatever on earth. Something like that. I'm paraphrasing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he gives him a pretty important lesson there. That so we have the combination there in this story, and supposedly comes from the Cherokee side of a hand healing and a deer. Now the Tibetans also have a story of something that has to do with a deer. I can't remember it now, but there's something with the Tibetans and a deer that turned out to be, I think, connected to all this, because I was doing a reading for someone one time and they had a Tibetan background, and that came up, and I found the picture of a deer later, so there might be something there. But that's what's coming to me for you, is that story, you know, that would make a connection between kind of what you're doing and a Cherokee story and the hand cycle healing energy that came up with both of you two tonight. So that's what I think. There might be something in that story that might be helpful for you.
Okay, thank you.
Was that story?
Wow, that
the,
was great.
Was that,
that
a
was
He Walked
great.
The Americas?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's L. Taylor Hansen's book. Published
yeah.
back in the 60s. Yeah. Her dad, she was an attorney in L.A. back in the 40s. She wrote science fiction, too. Her dad was the co-originator of Atlantic theory. And there's a book that, if you're a serious student in history, you ought to get. It's called The Ancient Atlantic. It's about 16 inches by 12 inches and about 3 inches thick. And, man, I'm telling you, it is a
treasure trove. You usually pick one up for about 30 bucks at addall.com or Alibris, or just make sure you get a hard copy one, and it's something you'll want to have on your coffee table. And boy, there's stories in there you wouldn't believe. Like, how did a gold coin with a picture of the Sphinx on one side, picture of the Giza pyramids, just suddenly appear on the ground in Texas? If some Egyptian prince wasn't over here and had to throw it away to, so he could get caught, whether he'd be killed. That's the only way it could have gotten over here. Oh, there's all kinds of things. She also later wrote, He Walked the Americas, which you can read online.
Yeah, that's a book I've referenced quite a bit, because it shows the common connection that we've all had ancestry that refers to or identifies someone at some time in our existence that came to us, a messenger, someone that brought information that was not standard to the typical life perception. And when we start experiencing those things, that's when we start to say, it's not only just a nice story, it's a reality that we can share. And, you know, the balance thing, we all think that we're balanced. Do I know that I have things that I need to work on? Absolutely. And we keep trying to keep it in that perspective that says, if you keep going in the way that you're going, and I'm referring to myself, I'll get used up too soon. I will be too willing to give away or to give out. And as a result, I end up doing a lot more work to try to maintain that. So I know that's part of my imbalance, is giving too much. And it's just been recent that that's been kind of, and it hasn't been pointed out by any one individual, but it's more in relations that you say, I think this is what I'm trying to be told. And if we don't keep the constant vigilance on ourselves, then we start lulling ourselves into this perception that we are balanced and that we're doing okay. And we're doing okay, but we need to look at all of these elements and say, you can't keep giving and giving and giving all the time, but you need to share that with people to say, here, why don't you help give with us? Why don't you join in? And that way we can kind of trade off those times, and it won't be one individual constantly. Because once you fall into the routine of giving, we start to think that that's what we have to do. There's no other way to deal with the issues or the relations that we get involved with. And then you start to see how the balance, when you apply the term balance, means there is a giving and a sharing and a taking of everything that we partake in. And by doing that, then we start to see how the balances really have to be looked at and applied, and we have that control. That's one part that we have control over, is to work on our balance. And when I would use references to say to someone, you know, balance is not like if when we were kids we would get up on the teeter-totter and you would stand in the middle over the fulcrum, the balance point. If we were perfectly balanced, there's no activity. There's no movement. So life is not perfectly balanced. And what we need to find out is how to shift our energy, or in those days it was shift your weight from side to side without bottoming out, without hitting really hard.
Like riding a bike.
Yes, absolutely. Same as riding a bike. And you find where that balance is. And then you say, now I understand these teachings of balance. and how they apply and why they're so important. And just because we're balanced at one point or one stage in life doesn't mean we're going to stay there. We have to, it's a constant effort.
That's right.
And that's part of that drive that keeps us aware.
Mike?
Yes.
You and I, you know, we were talking about some heavy things. I don't know if you want to get into it or not, but do you want to share a little bit about what you were talking about with the astrophysicist and 3 days of darkness?
Yeah, we can touch on that because I think we're in a time when the people are ready for it. Unfortunately, there's been so much time prior to this that has been viewed as, when I was growing up, you would hear people make a reference to the end of the world. Through the elders, we know that there's no such thing. But there is a man named Rudy Childs. In fact, Blue Otter, I sent you a package. You're going to get it tomorrow. And
okay.
It has a copy of the Peace Village documentary in there. And Rudy is in there. And I've got a few spots in it myself. But these are from so many different perspectives of what we're in right now and what we should expect as we get further into the time, the cosmic element that we're in right now. Now, Rudy is this very accomplished astrophysicist, and he works for the Smithsonian, and he also works for Harvard. And because he is so accomplished, he doesn't have to worry about what his peers think of what he's doing. So he's attended about the last 5 or 6 years up at the Peace Village, and he's had a great opportunity to get exposure from, direct exposure from the elders. And he basically says in the video, you'll see in the documentary, he says, everything that the elders are talking about is accurate. He said they don't need to have the explanation of how they know what they know. And what he's been identifying and helping students see, he said there are components in this creation that they identify, but they don't know how to fit it into the quantum, into their physics or into their mechanics. And when they find an item like that, he just titles it the God factor. And I said, what took you so long? I mean, this has been something that the elders have not only held on to, but they don't have to understand it or explain it logically, but they know it exists. And just knowing that it exists, that's what he has acknowledged with the elders. He says, you know these things exist, and he says, and you don't get hung up trying to give a technical explanation or a logical explanation of why. So when we start to move through these, whether you want to call them dimensions, if you want to call it etherical layers, if whatever you refer to that as, it's all a part of what we understand as the life force that maintains and keeps everything moving. It keeps the life active. It keeps it involved. And when we start to, and I'm, this is this year's, I guess, question to Rudy, because I always seem to come up with something every year. And I know we have discussed this, Blue Otter. The component that he's been studying specifically for about 15 or 20 years now are black holes. And I don't know where it came from. In fact, Rudy had asked me this last summer. He goes, where do you get your information? And I said, you know, I wish I knew. But I said, you know what? I think I get it the same place where you get it. Don't you use telescopes and look way beyond the stars? And he says, yeah. And I said, I think that's where it comes from. And I said, so I'm just grateful that it comes this way at the time when I'm ready to make these connections. And yes, one of the components that I think it really makes it clear on how does the spirit world or how does this quantum experience beyond the physical, how does it really work with the energy that the humans create, whether you want to call it karma or any other reference? But we all know that human was gifted, and I call it the gift curse. It's free will. And basically, free will just means that we can know the right thing to do, but we don't have to follow it because we have the free will that says, well, go ahead, test it. See what happens if you don't follow your right thing to do. And because of that, we get ourselves in a lot of trouble. And one of the components, what people like to, I guess, through influence of certain doctrines, they'll say, well, those evil ones or the ones that are the troublemakers or the disruptors, there's a place for them in the spirit world. And they're not allowed to mingle with the other elements. And I'm going, you know, that's just not right. That's a man-made concept. So what I started to venture into was its energy. And whether the energy has a positive or a negative element to it, it's energy. And I just started, and this is what I'm going to present to Rudy, is that let's just look at, over the eons of time, the humans that have done things that we might say are evil or wrongdoing or violations of this life. And if that violation, if that energy can't get transformed in any other way, I'm going to ask Rudy this question. Do you think it's possible that part of the purpose of having a black hole is that the humans, because the humans are the only ones that really can take on this element of evil, let's just say that those humans resonate with an attraction to those black holes, and they will be taken into the black hole and transformed, because he says the forces that they can tell are so strong, they're so forceful that light can't even escape. And you just try to put that into your brain, your mind, and say, how can a force be that great that light can't even escape from that element? And what would it tell me then, that if the humans that have chosen intentionally to do harm or to be in that way, that realm, that they would be transformed through a black hole? That energy that they would hold would be the attraction that the black hole would take them in, and on the other side, they would be recycled into light. They would be recycled back into the higher functioning element of life. And I don't know what's on the other side of the black hole. I need to ask Rudy. We need to sit down and have a little chat about that. But those are the kinds of things now that I think are important for traditional teachings to sit down with science or the things that are being discovered to say, do you think this is a probability? Do you think this is a possibility that we don't have to worry about rogue spirits out there that might try to cause harm or be interference in the future? Let's just sit and contemplate, maybe meditate, maybe take a time out and make an offering and say, help us with it. It's intriguing. It's just an interesting scenario or way of putting things that I said, how cool would that be, that maybe when you do come out on the other side of the black hole, they would say, because of this, you have to work your way through back to become a human and try it again. But it won't happen anytime soon because you took that path that you knew would have extreme consequences. It's not a punishment, but it is what it is. And you say, wow, I don't know if I want to try that journey, but it's interesting at least to speculate, to put the things down. And this is what I had seen Mad Bear do so many different times, is take scenarios like that, take things that we would perceive from this life in saying, well, maybe that element that is not harmonious is part of the balance. And do we need to bring the imbalance right close into our life? No. But we can ask it to go to that place where it can still exist. It can coexist without interfering with our journey, with our life. And when I started to see that this was the basic premise behind all of the elders' approach to things that people would say, how can we fix this? How can we change? It's not for us to fix or change. It's for us to stop interfering with the things that cause those. So when we start to see that these concepts not only work, but they're real, and we're supposed to be sharing it, I'm waiting. And this is what I love about this type of experience, is that you get the response and the feedback, and you look at it and you go, wow, how come I couldn't see that? How come I couldn't have that part come back? So when you reflect or bounce these things off of different people, it's just incredible to see the response or hear the response of saying, man, they might have something there. It's really intriguing, and it interests me, and that's why I continue to want to pursue how is it that these concepts, that what we were so told in science and by the system of academia, that it's not that way. This is only one perception, and maybe in their laboratory, that's how they can make it defined and say, yes, we can prove that. Yeah, but when you get out into the space that's not your laboratory, where you don't have those controls, what are the results then? Because you're allowing the other life forces to interact with whatever it is you think that should be the typical response or the outcome. Now we start seeing, wow, it's just a roll of the dice, and you really don't know what will the outcome be until you start adding these other components to it. And these other components are, what is your behavior? How has your behavior been in the last 20 years? What have you held on to as a medicine, as some way of saying, I want to stay connected to all of these things that can help us. I want to stay connected to these things that can guide us and still freely let us act through that and find out now it does work. And that's when I'm starting to see the payoff comes in the later stages of life. When you've maintained a discipline and you've honored the discipline, can we slide off and be naughty from time to time? Absolutely, that's part of being human. But then you make those reconciliations. You say, you know what, I know better now, and I won't do that behavior anymore. Because I know this is the kind of thing that energy, that medicine doesn't want to be near. It won't work for us if we don't provide the environment that attracts the goodness, the compassion, the insights, the helping. That's when we start to say, hey, we can still do this. We can still live this life. And we can provide the environment that draws these elements in closer. And when they come in closer, now we can work with it. So these are parts of the things that we're actually heading into, which have nothing to do with Wall Street or politics or religion. And yet the cosmos is saying, you know what, folks? You're going to get enlightened whether you want it or not. And I'm going, why do we want to fight that? Why do we want to resist when we know it's there for our benefit? And we should be welcoming that. And we should take the responsibility to help this system reform before making the cosmos make the change for us.
Hey, so Mike, we're running short of time, but let's do another show, because what I want to talk about is maybe bounce off of Rudy, what would cause 3 days of darkness, because when I Mad Bear passed before he finished his book Earth Mother Crying, and
yep.
when I picked it up and was able to use in the internet, he said, you know, someday somebody's going to put all the prophecies together and then we really will have something. And what I found was it didn't matter what culture, what religion, everything was pointing toward this 3 days of darkness, and I'd like to know how it could be possible. And
that's a great place to leave it, because I do have ideas
and the idea
on
of, and flooding, you know, possible flooding. And we don't have time to get into it tonight, but let's do that another time.
Okay.
Well, real good. Well, we'll leave it. We'll leave it there, and say goodnight to everybody, and we'll do this again soon.
Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that opportunity.
Thanks
okay,
a lot,
thank
guys.
You. Good night.
Hey, good night, guys.
Good night.
Night.
Let the truth be known to all mankind.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Inside the heart.
echoes of another time, let the wind blow, let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper,
Prophecy Keeper,
oh yeah. Like a love.